Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. James Herbert, jumping James Herbert, picturing all kinds of awful things about NBA players today. How's it going?
It's going great. I don't know what you're talking about. I picture only wonderful, happy things.
Well, apparently Dwayne Casey put a horrible image in your head.
Yeah, Dwayne.
Raptors PR did, and you just told me about it, and now I've got the horrible image in my head. And as I like to do for our listeners, bad thought, everybody has a bad thought.
Okay, so what happened was the Raptors are wearing their terrible, terrible camo jerseys tonight. I mean, it's for a fine reason, like it's Remembrance Day.
Yeah, Remembrance Day for you guys, Veterans Day for us,
yeah,
same thing.
Same exact thing with different names, but they have sleeves on them this year
because
the awful jerseys needed to be slightly more awful and uncomfortable.
I'm actually curious... For what you just said about the camo jerseys being sleeved and what you're about to say, I wonder what our listeners will find more disturbing.
everything is disturbing.
Yeah, but keep going.
So Dwayne Casey was asked about the sleeved jerseys, and he's a very diplomatic man, and he obviously doesn't want to say anything that would, you know, criticize the promotional staff or marketing or whatever. So he says, I'm game for anything. I'm about winning. If we win with them, we can wear bikinis. And, like, sure, that's Dwayne being funny. And Raptors PR man, Jim LaBombard, chimes in. I don't want to see Chuck Hayes, in a bikini. So that's the mental picture I have now. And now all of you have that mental picture, and I enjoy it.
Now I want to like, send out one of those tweets of what's worse, retweet for Chuck Hayes in a bikini, favorite for sleeved camo Raptors jerseys.
Sleeved camo Raptors jerseys, yes. I would probably... retweet it.
So you got a pretty fun game tonight that we'll talk about in a little bit, but we have fun games from last night that give us our news and notes of the day, and our news and notes are brought to you by Squarespace. What was your favorite game from last night? How much did you catch?
My favorite game was probably the Cavs game.
That was really good.
That was the most interesting game to me, and it was super high scoring, and there was a lot of stuff happening in that game. Like the first half of Ryan Anderson, where he was inexplicably left open all the time.
Oh, he went. He got stupid hot. He hit like 23 points in the first half.
Yeah, he just couldn't miss. It was awesome. And then seeing the Cavs in the second half be like, "Hey, we have all of these awesome offensive players." LeBron doing his triple double thing and dunking again. That was cool.
Yeah. After he just talked about it.
Game. Yeah. You know, my favorite moment of that game though. It was in, I think it was in the third quarter. Maybe I'm wrong. But the Cavs kicked it out from the post to Mike Miller, who was seemingly open on the perimeter. Davis was at the top of the key. Miller was on the left wing. And Davis was guarding Kevin Love, and he helped from the top to the wing and blocked Mike Miller's three-point shot. And I don't know that there's another player in the NBA that can pull that off.
Yeah, that was
simultaneously guarding Kevin Love and Mike Miller because he's just got – the craziest arms ever.
I think they still ended up scoring on that play because I think Mike Miller got the ball back and hit a shot. And I remember thinking at the time, like, his teammates have to be more prepared for him to block shots on the perimeter. Because it kind of just looked like they would, like, maybe I'm remembering it wrong and it was just like there was nowhere else for the ball to go but to a Cleveland Cavaliers hand. But it felt like they just kind of fall asleep on that. And
they definitely got the ball back. I can't remember if they scored. I feel like there might have been a fast break after a miss after that, but I could be wrong.
Maybe.
But
they I know Miller
got the offensive rebound for sure.
Yeah, I know Miller took another shot. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember if he hit it, but that was that was a fun game. Like, you know, so Anderson goes crazy early. Anthony Davis was great throughout.
Kyrie had some like ball stuff going on.
Yeah, Kyrie had a weird game. Like 32 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, only 1 turnover, shot really well, got to the free throw line 7 times. Like, you can't fault him for the game he had. And you can't say, like, oh, he played a selfish game because, you know, he had 9 assists.
Yeah.
But there was also this feeling like he would run pick and rolls with Love, and then Love would have a guard on him in the post, and then Kyrie would just be like, I got this, because he had a big on him, and he scored some of the times. He screwed up a couple of the times, but it looked like, and I think other people made this observation. Maybe Mike Prada made the observation. I think Andrew Hahn maybe made one too, where it was like Kevin Love looks frustrated that he's not getting these mismatches. Yeah. So it was this weird feeling, and then all of a sudden, like, you look up and Kyrie's got 30-9.
30, yeah. It's going to be, I mean, we keep saying it, like, it's going to take time with them, and I think we saw them, like, sure, like, maybe they're gelling, like, that's probably what people will write, but I think more than they're gelling is they just did great one-on-one stuff. Like, LeBron made a bunch of plays for himself and for teammates, and Kyrie got to the rim a lot. And right. did his thing, and they out-talented the Pelicans. They still didn't do a great job stopping the Pelicans, but it didn't matter. But I think this was kind of probably what we kind of expected from Cleveland out the gates.
Yeah, I think the craziest thing for me was, like, obviously the three-point shooting for the Pelicans was great, but that was mostly Ryan Anderson. I mean, he went 8 of 12.
Eight of them.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone else went 4 of 15. So, like, all right, you've left one guy open too many times, but you know, they defended it relatively well outside of him. But they only forced 5 turnovers. And, like, this is a team with Tyreek Evans, with Drew Holiday, with Eric Gordon. Like, these guys can turn the ball over. And you just didn't force anything. And especially, like, Ashiq. Like, Ashiq can turn the ball over in the post quite a bit. At times, you know, and I thought it was weird that they couldn't force anything the other way. It was all off long rebounds, and it worked out. And I don't want to nitpick, like, they won.
No, but
they scored 118 points.
Because part of the reason why this team hasn't gotten the break as much as, like, we assumed they would is they're not doing that.
Right.
And I mean, the Heat, you know, the Heat would have those, they called them skirmishes, when they would just go on like an 18-6 run or something in the third quarter, and it'd be like, oh, okay. And it would happen so quickly because they would force a few turnovers and they would either get threes on the break or they get like Wade or James dunking. And the Cavs, they don't do that. They will at some point, but they don't have the same defensive personnel. I mean, they have some good defenders.
Their pick and roll coverage is just atrocious.
Yeah, and that can get better.
Oh, certainly, yeah. It will get better.
Pick and roll coverage getting better doesn't mean that they're suddenly going to force a high amount of turnovers.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning, like, you just watching the game, like, Austin Rivers looked comfortable, you know, running a pick and roll. Jimmer Fredette looked comfortable running a pick and roll. Like, those are guys you should take advantage of.
I remember looking at the score in the second quarter and just being like, oh, so Rivers is out there, Fredette is out there, and Salmons is out there. Like, they're all out there together. And the Pelicans were winning. And it was like, okay, sure.
I think that
Salmons
has a
negative per PER right now, which is fine.
Of course he does.
I don't think he's made a shot this season.
He's terrible.
But, you know, it was, like, to me, that was easily the game of the night. Spurs-Clippers was, like, close.
Yeah, Spurs-Clippers was
about
well played.
40 total points fewer than I would have assumed.
Yeah, it was well played for the most part, but neither team could hit threes.
Yeah.
The Spurs went 2 of 19 from 3-point range. The Clippers went 5 of 22. They started a combined 2 of 24 in the first half. I mean, it was just the execution was there until you had to make a shot.
Yeah.
And then that wasn't there. Blake Griffin, this is the ridiculous thing about Blake Griffin, is he didn't look good to me. Like, he looked like he was struggling the entire game.
He was laboring.
Yeah, he's like sick or something, and he finished with 23, 10, and 6.
Because he's amazing.
Yeah, because, like, he's just that stupidly good. Like,
my favorite bit of that game that involved the Clippers, at least, was when he ran a pick and roll with Chris Paul, like, not the other way around. Like, late in the fourth quarter when they needed a basket, like, he ran the pick and roll. And attacked the basket off of the screen from him, and I was just like, that is weird. That looks like my TV is making a mistake. It was really cool.
Kawhi Leonard was phenomenal. He had 26, 10, 3, 3, 1. And it was, you know, it's coming off that thing of, like, we don't know what's going to happen with his vision.
Yeah.
It could be better in a month. It could be better tomorrow. It could be better in the summer. It could never be better. So that's kind of a weird thing he's dealing with, but
it looked like he could see yesterday.
Yeah, it looked like he could see just fine. He was incredible. He's great down the stretch. Down the stretch, we had a really weird moment to finish that game where Over the last 5:48 of the game, the Clippers didn't make a shot.
Yeah.
They had 3 points from Jamal Crawford getting fouled on a three-point attempt with 25 seconds left, and those are the only points they scored in that time. Some of that was really good San Antonio defense. Some of it was just bad Clipper offense. Some of it was just bad luck. But Chris Paul drives to the basket on a pick and roll, gets a great layup attempt that just rims out.
Yeah, just rolls off going in.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think you would guess 99 times out of 100 that thing's going in.
Correct.
Just rolled off the rim. And then Blake Griffin battles for the rebound, dives to the floor to secure the rebound, and didn't have anywhere to go. They didn't have any timeouts. Chris Paul calls a timeout with 1.4 seconds left. Now, what did you think Chris Paul did it as like a strategy thing, or did you think he just like, oh, we have to call timeout?
Because
the Clippers broadcast was making it seem like, what a smart play. This happened in 1976 in the NBA Finals. I was like, I think he just called a timeout.
I was like, good callback, Mike Smith. Like, but but I think he just did it because he thought that was the only option. I don't think he thought about it.
Yeah,
like,
Griffin
think it
had
was
nowhere
like,
to go with it.
Yeah, but I don't think it was like, okay, so I'm doing that because we're going to then hope that we can force a turnover and then whatever. Like, I think it was just Griffin was on the ground, so Paul saw no other thing to do. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it was this really calculated thing, even though he's generally, like, if you were to give any point guard or any player credit for thinking up something like that, it would probably be Paul.
Yeah, he'd be like a handful of guys that you would say, like, oh, he'd be that clever to do that. What was funny to me was the Clippers announcers not knowing the rule.
Because they seem to think that the Clippers might keep the ball.
Right.
Which, no. Like, because then that would be a thing that happened.
Yeah, like, teams would do that all the time if they were down one or down two. You would sacrifice that 1 point.
Yeah. That's not the rule.
No, it's certainly not. They couldn't get the steal. Kawhi hit 2 free throws.
Did you find yourself doubting yourself? Because I was watching that. I was like, they can't be. No, that's not it. But then I was like, but they're saying it like that's a thing. So I was kind of questioning my own knowledge of the rules of the NBA.
Let's just say certain color commentators in the league that when they say something, I assume they're wrong. And I'm not going to say anything other than that because, you know, we don't criticize media here at CBSSports.com. I'm just going to say that there are some people who talk about basketball who I assume are wrong. So, no, if it had been someone else wondering that, I may have thought, like, do I know the rule? Yeah, if Hubie was doing it, Jim Peterson's doing it, Jeff Turner, like any of these other guys, like I probably would have been like, wait, do I know the rule? Is that because it would have been like a clear path situation where I'd never know the rule of clear path. Like, I feel like I know it, and then I feel like I get it wrong almost every time. But no, I felt pretty comfortable knowing the Spurs were getting the ball.
Yeah, I doubted myself for a second, but, you know, that wouldn't have made any sense. That was a weird Spurs game. Like,
it's just weird to see them not hit shots.
I've never seen Matt Bonner shoot poorly, like, just period. Like, I don't think that's
and
the thing that happened.
He got great open looks.
Open, like, just, like, the same looks Ryan Anderson was getting. Like, you just expect that stuff to go in, and it just, for whatever reason, like, he didn't really do anything wrong. He was where he was supposed to be. He played. He got a couple of stops on Griffin, where I was like, hey, Bonner, defense. But, like, right. he missed threes, and you don't expect that. They still managed to gut it out. I thought Kawhi was incredible. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves, but
That late steal was just ridiculous.
Yes. He makes those plays. The kind of plays, like, those are the plays that Ginobili used to give them all the time.
Right.
And it's like, you still, every once in a while, you'll see Ginobili with one of those momentum shifters, but I think that's really become a part of Kawhi's game. And it was cool to see them, like, give him more room to do stuff offensively. I think Popovich said after the game that was the most amount of plays they've run for him in his career.
Yeah, Parker was really bad in the game, just very off. Duncan was great in the around the paint. Here's a stat for you. The Spurs were 9 of 33, 27% on uncontested shots.
Yeah, that's not
That's crazy.
Normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is not what you expect from the Spurs. That is just random. What were the Clippers on? Do you have that stat?
Yeah, Clippers were 13 of 28 on uncontested shots, so 46%. They were 43% on contested shots.
Yeah. It was a strange, like, somewhat well-played game, but...
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, I was like, this isn't fun, but it's not, like, bad basketball. It's just you get the play executed, and then no one's hitting the shot.
Yeah, I'm still kind of worried about the Clippers.
They only gave up 89 points, but I don't feel like they played good defense.
That's the thing. And, like, that has to be where it starts with them. Like, once you get to playoff time, like, they're going to figure it out offensively. Like, you have those, like, you have Blake and Chris Paul and shooters. Like, the offense will be cool. But if they're supposed to be championship contenders, like they're talking about, then you're going to need to see better defense than they've showed. Like, I don't think they've had a defensive, like, game, like a full game where you can really point to it and say they did that well this year yet. And they're 7 games in. Like, that's still not a lot, but I think that's long enough to at least be like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Another game, Indiana beat the Utah Jazz. The scrappy Indiana Pacers. Yeah, we were way wrong. They ended up winning by 11. Roy Hibbert, 29 points. A.J. Price had 22 off the bench.
A.J. Price stepping in to a new team out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we discounted the fact when we were talking about this that the Jazz were, this is like 3 games in 4 nights for them.
Yeah, also on the road. You know, that's tough for a young Jazz team. They're not good. They're 1-3 on the road this year, which, you know, small sample, but that's the toughest thing for
young teams, it's easier to start winning at home and then learn to win on the road. But, you know, I don't think the Jazz were, like, all bad. Like, Hayward is looking like...
He looks incredible.
Like, sometimes I think you're just off by a year. Like, everybody expected this to happen for him last year. And I think even, I mean, we're talking about Leonard. I think, you know, he had his breakout in the finals. And, of course, he had moments of brilliance throughout the year. But I think some people expected him to be, like, a, you know, number one, number two option offensively last year, and it didn't quite happen that way. But I think everybody was still totally right about the kind of player he is and the kind of player he's going to be. I think that's sort of the same with Hayward. Like, you're seeing it now.
I generally don't care enough to be like the I told you so kind of thing, but like, he got so much crap for that contract during the summer. And to me, the whole time, it's like, I'm not right about a lot, but, like, you could see that this guy's an awesome player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just... And so I just want to be, like, everyone... Like, I want everyone who laughed at the contract and said it was ridiculous. Like, I just want them to admit that they were horribly, horribly wrong after such a small sample. Like, it's not, like, I'm not into the I told you so. Like, I just don't care. But, like, this one, I care for some reason.
Well,
I just want to laugh and point at everybody who got it wrong.
Yeah. I think part of it was just, like, this team is so much more cohesive this year. Like,
the way that they're really being coached.
Yeah. And I think he's kind of a system player, if that makes sense. Like, I think he's...
Yeah, I get that.
He's one of those dudes that's more engaged when he's, you know, the ball's popping around the perimeter and he's able to make plays that way. Like, I don't think he's an amazing isolation player. But that's fine. And you're seeing his potential now. I'm kind of happy for the Pacers. I'm happy for that crowd that they got to see that. Like, this is just going to, like, it's just going to be a rough year.
Yeah.
And
to get
a win like that at home is nice.
It's only, 8 games? How worried are you about Trey Burke? Because he does have, you know, Exum's not really in position to take over that role yet. That's probably like a year or two away. But Burke's shooting 30%.
I'm worried about the shooting, and I'm worried about the defense, too.
Yeah, like, I don't hate his decision-making, but I don't know that he's a good enough, like, shot maker moving forward. I mean, he clearly has so much time to work on this stuff, but it's just, he's so off on his shots, it feels like.
Yeah. It's weird evaluating him, because I think he does the right thing most of the time.
Yeah, that's the thing, like, the decision-making's not bad. It's just,
sometimes it seems futile. Looks good when he's out there a lot of the time offensively,
right?
But the shooting at some point does become a concern. Like, you don't want like, it's getting to the point where people don't guard him on the perimeter, and he didn't come into the league with a reputation of like a guy who can't make shots. He certainly has the confidence to take shots and take big shots, but just in terms of consistently knocking down open shots on the perimeter and converting good looks that his teammates sometimes create for him, like, He's either in a season-long slump, or this is a serious weakness that the Jazz have to hope gets better. Otherwise, I mean, Exum didn't shoot well last night, but he's been way, way, way more efficient than Burke.
Right.
Over the season so far.
Knicks lose to the Hawks by 6. I admittedly didn't see much of this game.
I didn't either.
Melo looks like he had a nice line. 25-9-7. I wish I could offer some. I saw like the last like, I don't know, maybe 45 seconds of game time in this, and when the Hawks kind of put it away a little bit, and it just looked like the Knicks didn't have any execution. You know,
which isn't super shocking.
Right.
I mean, they're still like, I guess the plan at the end of the game like is just give it to Melo, but then they're trying to force the triangle thing at the same time, and like, Smith had a rough shooting night. I don't know. Like, neither of us watched a lot of this game, so it's hard to really give analysis, but I do think that if they have late-game struggles on offense, it shouldn't be particularly shocking this season.
Bulls handled the Pistons, got my cover.
Rose was fun.
Rose was
the one game we disagreed on yesterday.
and the entire time, I was legitimately rooting for them to cover just because I wanted you to be wrong. That's how petty I am.
Yeah, and of course. And you were rooting for Brandon Jennings to have an inefficient shooting night, which happened.
Well, you never really have to root for that.
Hey, I told you the night before. He was coming up a good shooting game. Maybe my mistake was betting on that happening twice in a row.
Yeah, this Pistons
But what I saw of that game was actually pretty fun.
This Pistons team just doesn't have a lot of cohesiveness.
No, like, but what did... You don't expect that. Like,
right, like, yeah, I'm not saying, like...
three-headed monster again.
Yeah, and it's just, It's sad that, like, I look at this, and I'm like, wow, they could really use Jody Meeks right now.
They could. Like, he would legitimately change the way that they play offensively.
Yeah.
And there's just... There doesn't seem to be consistency from game to game with this team in terms of how they play and how the shots are distributed. Like, Andre Drummond didn't make a shot. And...
Right.
There have been games this year where he looks like a superstar, and then there are games like this, and maybe that is just the ongoing, you know, learning experience for a young player. But I do think it's time that he's, you know, featured every game. Like, I think that's how this team should play.
Yeah,
but
when
you have Josh
Smith
taking 19 shots,
right? Like, he led the team in shots. He took some awful shots at the end of that game when it was still like a little within reach for Detroit. Like, it was like a 4-point game.
Yeah.
At one point, and it, with like, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes left. I don't know if I have the time right on that, but it's like a 4-point game. He takes a 3-point shot at the top of the key, and it's like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, he just doesn't know how to play basketball, and you're way too far into it. Like, he's a 10-year veteran, 9-year veteran.
Yeah, and I also think, like, he's, like, you can't play him a small forward. Like, I get it, like, you saw sometimes, okay, we have him at small forward, and he's got, like, Dunleavy guarding him, we're going to put him in the post. Like, theoretically, fine. But what ends up happening in reality, every time he plays a small forward, is he ends up shooting jump shots.
Yep.
And that's not what you want. I liked Rose. I thought
he looked so good.
He wasn't, you know, peak Derrick Rose, but he's so fast still, and he makes these layups in transition, and he's making great passes.
That double clutch.
That talked about. I had watched that so many times. I didn't understand it when I first saw it. Like, that is not something you see every day.
No.
The double clutch pass.
Yeah. That was great.
And he's. They're different with him, and I think we're starting to see the stuff that he was talking about when he was with USA Basketball.
Yeah.
And in the profile piece that I think was Wright Thompson, ESPN, the magazine, when he was talking about being a different player and being a more mature player, like, he wasn't a bad passer before by any means, and I think he would sometimes, you know, he would make those plays where he drives and he gets, like, two guys on him and he makes an awesome pass, but I think in general, his vision and how he sees the game and just his general floor game has improved. And it's going to take some time to see more examples of that just because he's got a bunch of new teammates and he's also been out of the lineup all year. But I think that in particular, that one example, that wasn't his only great pass yesterday, but one example really shows you, like, wow, like, he's seeing that and able to execute it, which most point guards can't even dream of pulling something like that off.
And that that Gasol Noah combination against, you know, a big talented front court with they combined for 30 points, 29 rebounds, 10 assists, 4 blocks. Like,
how much fun is Gasol having? Yeah.
He looks like he's escaped from prison and now he's just enjoying a good life.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't often hear, you know, a player has to endure Tom Thibodeau screaming at them every day.
Yeah.
And you're saying they escaped something, but he really, really did.
I'd like to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team. Works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the value's great. It starts at just $8 a month. Includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content's going to look great no matter what device you're looking on it every time. iPad, iPhone, Android phone, any of those will work. Start a free trial today with no credit card required. When you start building your website, go ahead and sign up for Squarespace using the offer code FUN. That's F-U-N. You're going to get 10% off. You're going to show your support for the Ion Basketball Podcast, who thanks Squarespace for their support of the podcast. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website. Before we get into tonight's games, you wrote something on Reggie Jackson. And
correct.
There's been some talk about Reggie Jackson. Like, there was the whole story about Kendrick Perkins freezing him out in the game against Brooklyn that I was actually attended. You know, that Thunder team is just so depleted and so bad right now. And he's kind of the guy in charge of keeping them together, even though, you know, you would say Serge Ibaka is the best player on that team right now. But Reggie is, he's got a lot of pressure on him in a contract year.
He does. And, you know, the funny thing about, you know, the freeze out story, the first thing I thought when I saw that is, you know, I'd read the game story too. And it was mentioned that, you know, Brooks had criticized the way that he'd run the offense after the game. It wasn't like a secret. But like the very next game, like in Toronto, you had the same guys who had reportedly frozen him out, and I'm not like doubting that. Like I think what happened was they wanted Telfair to run the offense, and they did legitimately not pass to Reggie. But I don't think it was like a super personal thing. I don't think there's any like larger issue with him and the team, because those same guys, Perkins and Ibaka, were like raving about him.
Yeah, I think Perkins even said like, I'm not proud of the way I handled that.
Yeah. And I think these guys really care about each other, and I think that he has the sort of game that I think can sometimes be confused with selfishness, when it's just, he's an aggressive guy, and he's really hard to keep away from the basket. And even, like, we saw him, there was that game against Memphis in the playoffs where, you know, Westbrook and Durant were, like, they were on the floor, but they weren't having crazy nights where, and they kind of let him take over. Like, sometimes he can just do that. And especially when those guys are not there, when he's looking at, you know, Nick Collison playing the three, or he's looking at, like, Telfair and Lance Thomas and Perkins all on the floor with him. And, like, the best option for the team is often for him to just try to create something and try to make something happen. And that might look selfish, that might look like over-dribbling, and there are surely some instances where the Thunder would like a bit more ball movement, and it's on him to try to balance that. But I do think, like, in speaking to him and in speaking to people who know him and his teammates, like, his heart is in the right place. He's trying to make the right plays, and it's going to be a constant balancing act for any point guard like that. And it's the same thing with Westbrook. It's the same thing that we've been talking about with Westbrook for years, in terms of balancing, looking for your own shot as a scoring point guard, and getting other guys involved. And I think it's harder to get other guys involved when the other guys are role players who are used to playing maybe 5 minutes
right,
and are now thrust into these bigger roles and responsibilities. And the interesting thing about him right now is how he handles all of that. And he handles the public perception thing.
He's really
and he
hard
the contract
on himself.
Year thing. And that's what I initially wanted to write about. And that's what, because I don't think that story had really been told, is just how hard on himself he is. And I think that sometimes gets lost. Like, we can criticize him, and maybe he'll see it. But if he has a bad game, like, that guy is saying way worse things to himself than anybody in the media is, you know?
Yeah. I noticed that after the loss in Brooklyn, it was he came out and he basically just said, like, I sucked, like, you know, I was terrible. I had, and they were like, oh, you know, you had this many points, this many assists. And I think he was like, yeah, but I had seven turnovers, missed a bunch of shots. Like, he wasn't, yeah. And, you know, part of that is they lost. I'm sure if they had won, he may not have been so hard on himself, but they got blown out, and he was just like, I was not good in my return. Like, this is not how I want to play.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, it's, I don't know, it was different than how most guys maybe will talk about a performance, because you could really see that, like, it genuinely upset him.
Yeah. And that's where I think he sometimes gets in trouble, where I don't think he should, is that he actually says what's on his mind. Like, you never feel like he's BSing you. And that's why there have been these quotes where he's told people, you know, I want to be a starter. I don't want to just be a temporary fill-in starter. I want to be one of the best players in the league. I want to be an all-star. I want to be this and that. And I think that's how most players actually feel, even if they don't want to share that, or they know that if they say it, they might be painted as somebody who's all about himself or arrogant. I think he wants to win more than anything, and I think he has bought into a smaller role, and he has sacrificed basically the whole time he's been in Oklahoma City, but that shouldn't mean that he's not allowed to talk about wanting to be great. And I also think, like, the two themes that kind of run through that story are him being hard on himself and him, you know, talking about confidence and being confident and aiming high.
Right.
And I think those two things are actually related, because I think if you are super hard on yourself, the way you kind of combat that is you have this deep reservoir of, like, self-belief that you can go back to. And obviously, I mean, if you read the story, like, his brother and his family is a huge, huge part of that. And the influence that his brother has in his life is often somebody who is encouraging him and reminding him, you know, he's the guy that'll tell him, you know, yeah, you had a rough first game back, but you also played 42 minutes after being out for 3 weeks with a bunch of guys who don't normally play. And you're trying to guard, like, a rejuvenated Deron Williams. Like,
right.
And that's something that he kind of needs to hear. And I think when his brother is not talking to him, then that's the kind of voice that he's hearing in his head. And I think those two things, like, he has to be able to say, I want to be great. Otherwise, he'll end up staying in a funk and not having confidence.
Yeah, it is kind of a cool look into, you know, we always get these, like, oh, this guy's mentally soft, or this guy, you know, this guy's too confident, he's too arrogant, whatever. Reggie Jackson kind of seems to be more of that, like, outwardly human element, right? Of like, no, you can be confident, but you can still keep perspective on what you need to work on. And sometimes you can be too hard on yourself, and it doesn't make you soft, it just makes you, you know, overly critical, and you need to find that balance. So it's kind of it's kind of a cool personality to take a look into.
He's a super perfectionist, and I also think just confidence is a tricky thing for NBA players. And I think it's something that it can sometimes come off as cliche when, you know, you have, like, a second year, third year player, even a rookie who has, like, a string of a few good games, and you see the story and they're quoted saying, I just feel more confident out there, and it's, or, like, I'm just being more aggressive or whatever. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean in terms of X's and O's on the court? Sometimes it's just a mental thing.
Yeah.
And if you have a tough game, how do you bounce back from that? If you don't get the ball where you want to, or your coach isn't putting you in the position that you think you should be in to succeed, how do you deal with that? And I think Jackson's a guy who has dealt with all of the above scenarios, playing hardly any minutes, playing huge starters minutes, and then the next game going back to the bench, ending games, not ending games. I think he's dealt with the whole ton in his career, and this is an interesting moment for him, because he's being asked to lead a team. But I think if you gave any NBA player truth serum, even a superstar, and you say, like, are there times you struggle with confidence, they would say yes.
Yeah.
Because they're human beings, and sometimes you feel like, you know, the situation isn't necessarily optimal for what you want to do on the court. And I think that a big part of sports psychology and a big part of becoming a professional is learning how to try to balance that and get over that. And that's why you have guys saying the cliche, you know, I want to keep it even keel, never get too high, never get too low. And, like, we cringe when we hear that because every day somebody is saying that in the NBA. But I think that is a big part of, like, the day-to-day, like, psychology of an NBA player.
I want to take it one game at a time as we get into tonight's games. How about that?
Of course you do. Yes.
Yeah. We got six games on the schedule tonight. And everyone go read James' piece on Reggie Jackson at CBSSports.com. Six games on the schedule tonight. We're going to start NBA TV game Orlando at your Toronto Raptors.
I can't believe this is on NBA TV. The Raptors-Sixers game on Sunday was on NBA TV, and now the Magic.
Yeah.
So apparently this is what America wants.
Right. This is the Raptors are America's team, which is
the
weird.
Raptors and random, like, Eastern Conference, like, bottom feeders.
Right. The Raptors are 11-point favorites at home. I kind of like the Raptors here.
I do, too.
That's a lot of points, but this team is just so good at home.
I feel weird saying it because the Magic are scrappy as hell, and they are going to play hard. But there's been a different feeling around the Raptors lately. I had they started 4-1, and if you talk to me then, like, despite the 4-1, I wasn't super impressed with how they were playing. But they've been acting like a very professional, good basketball team the last couple of games. And I realize one of them was against Philly, but I think the fact that they actually blew out Philly instead of taking them lightly and, like, messing around in the first quarter, it said something. And the way that they handled Washington was huge, because that's a bit of a rival for them and a tough team as well. And the Raptors just thoroughly outclassed them, and their MO for a lot of last season, even when they were winning, is they would let teams stick around and they'd kind of eke out a win at the end. And that's, you know, that's part of what good teams do, is they find a way to win even when they play badly. But I think they've been giving a more consistent effort lately, and I think that's why they could, why I would pick them to cover, even though the Magic do scare me.
Yeah, we both got Toronto there. Yeah, I think if Orlando had Oladipo, I would think this line, and probably the line wouldn't be the same, but I would think, like, that's out of control. But no Oladipo, I still don't see this Orlando team being consistent enough on the road, especially not in Toronto. We also have the Thunder at the Milwaukee Bucks. Your Bucks are 3.5-point favorites.
That's an interesting one.
The Thunder have not won on the road this year.
Yeah.
The Bucks are 2-1 at home.
I think I'd go with the Bucks.
Of course you will.
I think it's a winnable game for the Thunder, for sure.
Yeah.
But I like the Bucks at home. I think that win they had against Memphis was pretty impressive. And they're kind of starting to really use Giannis offensively in a way that he wasn't featured as much last year. You could kind of see his confidence building in summer league, and he played point guard when he was in Greece, and he's naturally, you know, he wants to share the ball, he wants to pass to people, but has a matchup that he can take advantage of, he really should, and I think Jason Kidd is trying to drill that into him, like, we need you to score, and we need you to drive and not just stay on the perimeter, and he was matched up with Zebo, and he just went at him in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know, I like what I saw of this Thunder team against the Kings, and granted that was at home against the Kings team, we still have no idea what to think of them, but Jeremy Lamb's back, it gives them a little more balance to the offense. I'm going to take the Thunder to cover this thing.
That's fair. Is Perry Jones playing?
That I don't know yet. He's still day-to-day.
In the lineup, like, this is a pretty interesting matchup. I mean, it already kind of is.
Yeah.
But, like, I kind of just want to see, like, if Jones and Giannis guard each other, that's like heaven for me.
Anytime you can watch two bench players defend each other, it's a must-see TV.
They're both, like, 6'11", like, super fast, super athletic. This is my style.
Yeah, no, I, or
bench player's fine.
Are you talking about them, or are you talking about Anthony Randolph? I can't remember who, I'm getting confused on who you're describing.
That is... That is not fair.
Now I'm just being a dick. All right, we got Lakers at Grizzlies. Grizzlies are 9.5-point favorites. The Lakers are on a one-game win streak. I don't know if that counts as a streak.
That's not a streak.
They're on a one game win experience.
An odyssey.
Yeah, they're on an odyssey, a one game odyssey. I like the Grizzlies at home.
Yeah,
they can win this game by double digits pretty easily.
The question is like, you know, can the Lakers score more than 90 points against this Grizzly team?
That's asking a lot.
I don't see it. I don't think the Lakers, I mean, we have talked about the Lakers being bad and yeah. way too much on this podcast, but like, I'm just trying to picture like the ways that they will get good looks against this team. And
right.
it's not like it, Kobe can go off and hit his fadeaways. But I don't think that's enough to carry you against this group. I think Memphis has looked pretty, pretty solid this year.
Yeah, I think Memphis just rolls in this game.
We get to see Tony Allen guarding Kobe, though.
That is always a good show. All right, we got Kings at Dallas. Dallas, 6.5-point favorites. I think I like Dallas to win this game, but I like the Kings to cover. I think this is a close game.
This is a good test for these impressive Kings, hey? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is an actual real... like. I get that they're only 4-3, and I know like Parsons hasn't like shot super well, and it'll, I guess, take a little bit of time. But I see the Mavs as a legitimate like, you know, Western contender.
I also
think the Kings as this team that, you know, there's talent, and like Cousins has been like, we can put any superlative we want, like he's been incredible. But I mean, this is a pretty balanced Mavericks team, and I think, you know. 6.5, like, if their shots are falling, I could see the Mavs doing it.
Yeah. This is a good team for the Mavericks to kind of figure out their defensive issues against, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you pound the paint, this team doesn't really move the ball a whole lot. Like, this is an offense that the Mavericks can really kind of figure stuff out defensively. So I think that that's an important thing to watch with them, and obviously playoff seeding. It would give the Mavericks the early tiebreaker if these two teams tie, and they would.
Yeah,
a Mavericks win does tie them in the wins and loss columns.
There you go. I'll take the Mavs.
Okay. Yeah, I like the Kings to cover, but I think the Mavericks win.
Yeah.
The Charlotte Hornets are at the Portland Trail Blazers. Blazers are 7.5-point favorites. Charlotte just lost to the Lakers. Portland, you know, very good at home. Charlotte's offense is just a mess.
It's rough. I mean, we talked about this yesterday a bit, but I mean, the Blazers aren't an amazing defensive team, but I just like, that's a tough place to play.
Yeah.
7.5 is a tricky number.
It is a tricky number.
I just want to take the Blazers.
Yeah, I'm going to roll with the Blazers because they're at home, but I don't feel good about that. That's kind of in that danger zone of, I think, like a backdoor cover could easily happen.
It could. Like, couldn't you so picture, like, Kemba and Lillard having a little, like, duel at the end of a close game there? Like, it's a thing that you could imagine. I don't know.
Charlotte's been so bad on the road, though.
I don't trust Charlotte. Like, it's not just they've looked bad on the, they've looked like a mess on the road.
Yeah. So we're both going with Portland?
Yeah.
All right, last game of the night, NBA TV game. Spurs at Warriors. Spurs coming off a back-to-back where they did not hit any outside shots but still came away with the win. Don't know. Is Klay Thompson playing tonight? He's probably playing,
right?
That's
a very good question. I think he's playing because I don't think it was anything super serious.
Right. Yeah. No. There are no listed injuries for him right now. Like, I think he's healthy. 7.5-point favorites for the Warriors. That's a lot of points. It is a back to back. You never know if Pop's going to play anybody.
That is the question here.
I'm going to take the Warriors, but I have less than zero. I have negative confidence in this.
What does that mean? If you have negative confidence, shouldn't you be taking the other team?
I know I could take any team in this situation. I would have negative confidence in that in that.
I am taking the Spurs, and I'm going to have positive confidence.
Okay. you think the Spurs do it.
In the Spurs. Yeah, I don't think they're going to shoot that badly again. The Warriors...
I wouldn't be shocked if the Warriors won this game by 15. I wouldn't be shocked if the Spurs won this game by 15. I wouldn't be shocked if this game ended in a tie. Like, I think anything can happen.
Even a tie?
Even a tie.
Okay.
Especially a tie.
Especially a tie.
Yeah.
All right. I'll roll with the Spurs because I think they have a better game in them than they played last night, even though it's a back-to-back. I'm mostly scared of Pop deciding that none of his good players will play.
Right. And even then, they still...
Yeah,
they can still put up a fight and make it close.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's going to do it for today, James. We follow you on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA. Read your Reggie Jackson thing on CBSSports.com. We've got 5-star review tonight. I've got a big Andrew Wiggins thing that's going to be posted tomorrow. We've got videos on the website. It's like an NBA coverage.
It's all happening.
It is all happening. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Zach.